Well, good morning, and welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue. 10 minutes after 9 o'clock, it's time to begin the morning panel discussion on topics in the news, and you can always join the conversation by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org. It's roundtable@wamc.org. That's the email address. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Today we're joined on the program, or soon we'll be joined, by WAMC's Alan Shartok, University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo, and former Daily Freeman publisher Ira Fussfeld. It's nice to have you all here today, and frankly, it's nice that you just walked in. Rosemary was here on time. Alan and Ira just sort of ambling in now. They just got done with the media project and feeling fairly full of themselves. Here they are again. How was the program today, gentlemen?
Was that a fat reference?
Full of themselves?
No. You're puffed up. You obviously did a great job.
Are we on the air or is this a rehearsal?
We're on the air.
When you walk in, when the show's on, you have no idea if it's a rehearsal. How was the media project today?
It was fine. Rex told a wonderful story.
Oh, really?
You want to hear it?
If we must. I mean, do you want to give it away? It'll be on the media project.
Well, but it'll be a tease. For the media
We're not going to. We took selfies. That's the clue for this week's.
Selfies.
You took selfies?
Yes, that was in light of one of the stories of the week. We took a selfie.
Oh, good for you. Oh, yes. This referring to President Obama taking a selfie at a funeral.
That's correct.
I see. Not
that funeral has provided a lot of interesting stories. I am fascinated with the deaf interpreter who turns out to have been using made-up symbols.
Isn't that extraordinary?
It's amazing.
And well, he claims he's qualified.
His explanation is that he's schizophrenic and he was having hallucinations.
Seeing angels, I believe.
Seeing something. But the experts who have looked at it said, he doesn't have any facial expression, which if you've ever seen deaf interpreters is really unusual, and that he did not use any symbols that really meant anything. It's seen as one more sign of how disorganized that whole celebration.
And this great celebration in honor of this great man. And what were the three major stories that people in this country are talking about?
Exactly.
That one, the selfie, and then of course the handshake with Raul Castro.
Right.
So that's the big news that came out of this.
But the most important of those three was the handshake.
Yeah.
Because here was Nelson Mandela, who counted the Cubans as friends and who were with him
very big guy,
very earlier,
close friends
and
with Fidel.
It was all about conciliation.
Here
comes Roger Ailes and the rest of these guys trying to make trouble.
I think that Nelson Mandela would have laughed at and approved of all three stories. It would have taken delight in them.
He did have a great sense of humor. Mm-hmm.
But the selfie thing—that's not a story, right? I mean,
it's a story because
it shouldn't be, should it?
Well, let's put it this way: you own a disgusting degenerate newspaper like the New York POST.
Wait, this has been in a lot of newspapers, yes?
Yeah, but they have really made big stuff at Fox about some of the stuff. And then there were some things that were said by some of these papers. I can't remember which one I read it in. Michelle was really angry that he was flirting with the very attractive Danish Prime Minister, is that what she was? And she was sitting there, she was laughing. I mean,
silly.
It really is the worst kind of journalism.
Well, I thought it was a great picture, and I think it was a picture that was worth disseminating throughout the world. As an inside curiosity picture, look, here are these world leaders having a little fun.
Yeah.
But what it turned out to in several media outlets, as Alan described, was A, it was disrespectful to do this during this event, and B, it looks like Michelle is PO'd at the president. I mean, that's just nonsense. I mean, as the photographer, the French photographer who took that picture said, seconds before he snapped that picture, Michelle was joking as well.
Sure.
So there was that. And secondly, the nature of that event, as we've come to learn, is typical in South African culture. It was a celebration as much as it was a memorial. And as I said earlier on the media project, Sunday at 6 right here on WAMC.
Ah, forward promotion.
I turned on the speech in the morning and I thought Obama was at the Today Show because there were people behind him in the crowd dancing and waving, hardly paying attention to what it was he was saying. But that's part of the culture there.
Well, That wasn't on the topic sheet, but darn good. And well played, everyone. That was Ira Fussfeld. Alan Shartok is here. Rosemary Armeo is here. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. First on our official topic list for today, it's not great, but House expected to okay budget deal. This is from our own website, WAMC.org. The House expected to vote today on the bipartisan deal that would set spending levels for the next 2 years, replace many of the indiscriminate sequester budget cuts, and in theory, at least take off the table one of the most partisan of the many partisan issues that have contributed to the gridlock in Washington. However, you know, not great is the way the headline describes it. There are Republicans who are, interestingly, in the Senate who say, hey, we're not voting for this. There are Democrats who are not happy. Panel, discuss.
Yeah, it's that's the nature of this deal. It is a deal. That's about it. And as messy as it is and all the problems with it, it's a whole lot better than the sequester deal, for example, where everyone just threw their hands up in the air and let a measure that was never supposed to happen take effect. And sequester just hurt. It's kind of a thoughtless cut across the board and around the board and at least now they're thinking. I'm interested in the new Democratic opposition that's just come up. I just read about it this morning that the bill does not take any account of, and nor is there any measure anyplace else that would continue benefits for the long-term unemployed.
Oh, that's right. Instead of 26, instead of doubling 26 weeks, you know, look, there are a lot of people who can't find work in this country. No two ways about it.
Right.
And it's a terrible thing. If your family depends on you and you're out of work. On the other hand, there is – I had a relative.
You did?
Yeah, he's still with us.
Okay.
And it was during, I think, the Johnson era, and they kept raising the amount of weeks. He was a professional, and they kept raising the amount of weeks that you could be on unemployment. I think they did it three times back then. And on the last day of the third one, which was going to be the final one, he got a job. So there are some – are you following me?
Sure.
In other words, when he needed to get a job, he got a job.
Right.
So while I think the vast majority of those people would rather have a job, there are those people when you tighten the system up who are more likely to go out and look a little harder.
Are there jobs to be had?
Wow.
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, I don't really know. I feel for the people who don't have jobs. And who really do want them, and I know many of them because I get visited upon.
This seems in line with me to the SNAP reductions. That is money, government expenditures, that goes right back straight into the economy. If you have food stamps, you're buying food. The money is going back out. And it's the same with unemployment. Those are not generous checks. You don't go out and party and live large on that money. And you're putting it back in, you're buying you're paying your rent, you're buying food and necessities. That's not money that's hoarded. This is really bad for the economy.
Aren't you painting with, Rosemary, respectfully, aren't you painting with a broad brush here? In other words, when you say it always goes back, I mean, even there are people who cheat on Medicare. There are people who cheat on Medicaid. There are people who cheat on welfare. We know that when we tightened up on some of the welfare things.
That's why we have regulations, Alan. You don't make legislation based on the miscreants, on the few miscreants. It's like designing a welfare policy that's going to take account only of the cheaters and leave, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of children.
At the end of the day, much like what we discussed about health care, if people don't have unemployment money or if people don't have health care and the government is saving money theoretically as a result, we're all paying for
it
anyway.
We're still going to pay. Absolutely right.
I mean, I was going to go back to the deal itself.
Yes, good plan.
I defer to Alan's political expertise, but I'll give you my opinion. It seems to me two things at work here, and I thought something very interesting happened yesterday beyond the deal, and that is the Republicans have finally recognized that if they are going to go anywhere in national elections, they can't be seen as the blocking party, and they can't be seen as the party that is leading to a shutdown.
Absolutely.
And you notice that Paul Ryan, when he announced this deal with Senator Murray, shutdown was very high, and it was in the lead. And I'm sorry, Ray.
No, go ahead.
And the other point I was going to make is at the when there began already to be criticism from the far right that this deal was not good enough, and Republicans in the middle were coming under fire, Boehner now stepped to the microphone and said, "This is ridiculous," and it looks like the line has been drawn.
And it seems to me that this is now a reverse or an inverse situation. You have senators saying, "No, we're not going for this," and the House Republicans are saying, "We're doing this," and I suppose politics are at play here, and Alan, you could probably speak better to this. Well, hang on.
I thought the
Republicans in the Senate, it's going to pass anyway. So except for a couple of them, they can all say, we voted no on this. They know it's going to pass.
We do know that in politics traditionally, there, and I've spoken of this before, that leadership looks at the people who are most vulnerable in either party. So, for example, Chris Gibson, who is our congressman right around here, one of our congressmen, got up yesterday and his picture was all over the place saying, that there are times that people who are in trouble need to be taken care of, basically. I mean, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he was saying the things that would appeal to Democrats. So in other words, they've let him off the hook. The leadership has let him off the hook. There's a saying, you're either off the hook or you're in the tank. In the tank means, hey, we need your vote, we're going to get your vote, and you're darn well going to do what we tell you to, as opposed to the people who are most vulnerable because they are in competitive districts, and they're more likely to get up and to endorse this. Now, Ray, I took some issue with what you just said.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. In which you said the Senate, this is reversed. Hey, the Senate passed the bill. In other words, there are enough. They've got enough Democratic senators to pass this bill, right?
Well, but the point is, then it lets, as you say, off the hook or in the tank. That lets the Republicans in the Senate take a view that maybe they don't truly hold and vote no on this.
I doubt it.
Because they know it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, isn't that typical? I mean, you see that in Albany a lot, where a vote in, say, the Assembly is so clearly going to go one way or the other that it enables people who are in those borderline districts to say, I'm safe to vote the other way because that'll play better in my district.
But it's a function – I'm sorry to get so political science-y on you – but it is a function of leadership to make those decisions, not individuals.
So the leader will allow the person to.
You come to Shelley Silver and you say, you're Max from the Bronx. You win 98% of the vote and say, my people are killing me on this. And Shelley would say to him, shut up, Max. Nobody knows who you are. They're going to vote for you. You're going to win. But if it's somebody in a hard-fought district, which used to be run by the Republicans, which is now won by 10 votes for the Democrat, they're letting them off the hook.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's what you're describing may be happening in the House and the Senate.
It would appear that way. And that's Ira Busfeld. Alan Chartok is here. Rosemary Armeo is here. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. We'll take a short break, Kimba, and then we'll do some underwriting. Hello, Kimba. We're going to do a little underwriting, and we'll be back.
Support comes from Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, presenting country singer-songwriter Roseanne Cash, performing with her husband, guitarist John Leventhal, Thursday, December 19th at 7:30 p.m. TroyMusicHall.org. And Harney & Sons Fine Teas, 200 different varieties of tea featuring holiday and special occasion tea gifts, gift baskets, accessories, and more. In Millerton, Soho, and online, Harney.com.
Lovely, lovely music. Thank you for being here. 9:24 on the round table on WAMC. All right, panel, your mics are on, and so we'll stop talking until spoken to.
Well, wait a second. You said we were going to go have this, and then we're going to have that.
But so we're back on now, right?
How do we get back on?
The light went on, and we're on.
Well, who's making?
And thank you for not swearing.
Who's making these decisions?
I am in the driver's seat.
Okay, okay.
I make these decisions.
Where is the on the air?
Over there. You see that light over there?
There's one.
Ah, there we go.
There's another.
Oh,
they're
excellent.
Not the best. There should be one over there for excellent. You, Ira, and one over there for Alan.
But you're responsible because you
I said, here we go.
You told
us. And then the coffee clocks
we were going
went on.
Back, and then we were going to have news, and we were going to have this and that. And then There we were, caught.
Have you done this before? Have you done this show before?
I have.
All right, then you have no excuse.
Okay.
Sorry, we're out of time. So long,
yeah,
everybody.
Really.
Good night, everybody.
All right, you know what? This is an obstreperous panel,
Dear
and I'm
Alan,
not happy.
Why are you giving Ray such a hard time?
Here we go. We got a few minutes here. We may pick this up after the news. Criminal action expected for J.P. Morgan in Madoff case. This is from the New York Times. J.P. Morgan Chase and federal authorities are nearing settlements over the bank's ties to Bernard L. Madoff, striking tentative deals that would involve roughly $2 billion in penalties and a rare criminal action. The government will use a sizable portion of the money to compensate Mr. Madoff's victims. The settlements, which are coming together on the anniversary of Mr. Madoff's arrest at his Manhattan penthouse 5 years ago already, would fault the bank for turning a blind eye to his huge Ponzi scheme, according to people briefed on the case who are not authorized to speak publicly to the New York Times. Now, here's the bigger issue, and I think we'll only get started on this. Jumping ahead of the New York Times piece, the government has been reluctant to bring criminal charges against large corporations, fearing that such an action could imperil a company and throw innocent employees out of work. Those fears trace to the Enron indictments, which cost 28,000 jobs. The agreements, however, have fueled concerns that some banks, having grown so large and interconnected, are too big to indict.
Mm-hmm.
And is this the bigger issue in this story?
Well, can you imagine they're going to round them all up and put the entire J.P. Morgan banking establishment in jail?
So much for
corporations being people, you know.
Well, in 2002, as you mentioned, Enron's accounting firm Arthur Andersen was hit with these criminal charges, and as a result of it, they ended up out of business, and as you said, almost 30,000 jobs were lost.
Yeah.
So I really think that that's kind of a notable goal to want to avoid. But J.P. Morgan's actions in the Madoff case are really strikingly horrible. They violated the Bank Secrecy Act. They knew for a long time what was going on, that this was a Ponzi scheme. Did not alert anybody. They were part of it. They made it happen.
Well, and they say their personnel acted in good faith all along.
That's what they're saying, and also that they weren't the only ones fooled. But, you know, the evidence is coming in, and it's showing quite otherwise. So the bank and the government have reached this deal. And the bad thing, of course, is it does raise questions about, are there really such institutions so big that we can't indict them anymore, which means they can act and do whatever they want and get away with it?
Which
that's
is why we call
kind
them banksters.
Scary. Right, banksters, exactly. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the government is bringing in a sizable amount of money, and they say much of that, $2 billion, I think,
yeah,
in penalties, and much of that will go back to some of the victims. The New York Times also this weekend had a terrific story about some of the people who lost their life savings in the Madoff scandal and how they've had to completely alter their lives. I mean, none of them are some of them are struggling. Most of them were very wealthy in the first place. Mm-hmm. But it's an intriguing story. I would like the government to do better than they are on this.
But don't you think the government got tremendous criticism, Rosemary?
The government did?
The government, because when the great financial collapse came down, as well as the Madoff stuff, the government relied on many of the insiders from the banking community. Who have been, you know,
sure,
part
and
of it.
J.P. Morgan is a huge lobbyist. It has great sway in Washington, and that's part of it. So, and it's also been really involved. I mean, super involved in the negotiations over the new Volcker rule, which we have talked about here, and will probably come up again next week when it's finally mm-hmm. announced. So, this is a company that has huge power. They also just got indicted. They also just paid a penalty, reached a settlement, and another scam. Did you read about that? Why am I not?
Well, listen, you'll have time to research that, and we all will, because it's time to take a break, and we will do just that. We'll get some news. We'll pick this up again on the other side of the news, and then we'll talk about weed and legalizing pot and happy workplaces, which may or may not correspond. It's the roundtable. Rosemary Armeo is here. Were you going to say something, Alan? No. Rosemary Armeo, Ira Fussfeld, Alan Shartok, I'm Ray Graff. Back after the news. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:36 is the time. It's our panel this morning. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue this week. And the email address, if you want to weigh in on anything you hear or you want to join the conversation, send hate mail, et cetera.
Don't do that.
Well, we do get occasionally some
sniping. Why encourage more of it?
Well, I mean, they're going to do it anyway. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And, Alan, we have something from the email box, yes?
Oh, yeah. Our very good friend, Marty Bricks.
Marty.
Marty, as you know, he's terrific. And he wrote and said on the unemployment thing,
yeah,
I believe that's what he's – yeah, unemployment. He said much too long, meaning we give out
benefits.
Unemployment too long.
Yeah.
And then he wrote a second piece in which he said he's a man of few words. He said, killing small business, Marty.
Okay.
Well, unemployment is killing small business?
Yep. Well, if you're paying – you're paying in and your rating goes up, sure.
Yeah, well, having a whole lot of people without jobs isn't too good for small business.
Yeah, what do we
either.
Do to – I mean, I know a little bit about the Unemployment Bureau. When you are filing for unemployment, they are constantly after you, and they are looking to see if you're at least looking for work. And
So guys show up here every day, and they say – okay. They fill out an application because they have to.
All right. Well, let's – beyond that, if these people are cut off at 26 weeks
– yes.
Then what happens to them? Where do they? What crack are they going to fall into?
Well, that's
into?
Exactly right.
And so again, who's right. paying for it?
Yeah.
Can we just mention go back to J.P. Morgan more time because
sure.
I brought this up and had an incomplete thought. I am amazed that J.P. Morgan right now is settling for $2 billion to end their little problem with Madoff. It comes on the heels of a $13 billion settlement that they reached over their troubled mortgage securities,
mm-hmm.
kind of set off the entire. Financial crash. So this is $15 billion just paid out to settle their
sure.
problems so
chump
they
change.
Can continue to do business. That's astounding.
But is it chump change?
Think it is.
When does it not become chump change? At what dollar level does it not become? I mean,
I think you'll know it when they're out of business.
Well, do you want them out of business? That gets back to our original conversation.
Do you want them out of business?
No.
I think that the settlements are carefully fixed with the government to make sure that the health of the financial institution is not in danger. But this is an institution that can afford that. Just we can do wrong, make a ton of money, and we'll pay out, you know.
But that's why it has to be enough so as to not put them out of business, but enough so that they feel
it.
Because if they
right.
don't feel it, then it's a wasted effort, and they're going to keep doing it. And you know, as I was saying off the air, as I neared retirement and I was trying to organize my finances and working with my financial advisors in Manhattan, you know, each day I say to myself, do I have a Bernie Madoff situation just around the corner? It's terrible to think about all the people who lost all of their money that they counted on in their retirement years.
Also, as I mentioned before, J.P. Morgan is heavily involved in lobbying for this revision of the Volcker Rule, which will be reinstated, which is supposed to be designed to cut back speculative investments by banks. So they're involved, which means, you know, they still have a view that's their business. They are going to be doing this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have to have somebody doing that, right? Or capitalism falls apart completely. Yeah.
Pope says that's not such a bad idea, and he's the man of the year in Time magazine.
Okay.
Well, I may have posited on this air. I know I've done it elsewhere, and I always caution that I'm not. I don't want to be considered anything other than a capitalist. But if you look at some of the issues in this country today regarding
right.
the disparity of wealth
right.
and corporations are only in it to make money, things of that sort, well, what is it that we've been brought on in this – what we brought up on in this country? The idea is to be successful and you go to college and you get a degree and you get a job and you make money and you're striving to make money and to make money and you make money. And now we don't want the money to be made the wrong way. We don't want people to be abused, but that's our system.
Right.
No? I mean, do...
Yes.
Capitalism has within it, you know, the potential for suicide. There's no two ways about it. I've talked about it before. I mean it. FDR knew it. The New York Times knew it, knows it, which is if you take everything away from people and leave them nothing and no potential, that sets up the potential for real revolution. There's no. I mean, I know that, and I think everybody else knows it. The reason that this housing crisis was so terrible was that you were taking away the last thing that most people had: their houses. You take away their house, there is no reason for hope. And so that is why capitalism has to be modified to make sure that there are rules and that the greedy pigs don't take everything.
This is a lesson that's not completely known in Washington yet. And the view was, and with disastrous results, that we don't have to regulate them, that out of self-interest they would regulate themselves. And what we saw was 2008. So I wish that your view, which is very reasoned and makes sense to me, I wish it were shared by other people.
But what has happened is, as we've painfully seen, that the middle class has eroded, and we've got the one extreme of the very rich and the other extreme of the very poor, and it's with the exception of the Bernie Madoffs of the world, everybody's played the system the way the system was designed, the way the founders have said this is the way we should go. And so when you hear people say he wants socialism, or the president is a socialist,
or the Pope is a socialist.
I mean, what is the look? What did the Pope do? He was trying to look out for the downtrodden. Isn't that his job?
Right.
You know?
Yes,
if it wasn't a dirty word, it would not be wrong to say, gee, maybe socialism is not such a bad thing in a certain way to get our financial house in order.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's what's our email address?
It's roundtable@wamc.org, and you can we'll forward it to Ira, and he'll respond.
I got in the car with the taxi driver the other day who's, you know, working hideous hours, not making a lot of money, doesn't have health benefits, and he said, what's wrong with socialism? Tell me that again.
All right. You ready to shift gears?
Yes, sir.
Well, the cab driver was also.
Very good. Ira Fussfeld, ladies and gentlemen. Alan Shartok as well. Rosemary Armeo. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. 9:43. Why are you looking at the...
I always look at the clock to see what...
What's next?
Plenty of time left, old boy. Plenty of time left. New York State lawmakers roll out measure to tax legalized marijuana. This is from CBS 2 in New York. A New York State lawmaker outlined her proposal Thursday to raise revenue by making marijuana legal.
Liz Krueger.
Liz Krueger's measure. The Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act would legalize, regulate, and tax marijuana under state law. It'll take the market in marijuana away from the criminal enterprises, just as happened when alcohol prohibition was ended, she said at a City Hall press conference. Krueger, a Democrat from Manhattan, said her bill would bring in hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue for the state. New York State Assembly Health Committee Chairman Richard Gottfried signed on to the measure.
I predict that it is going to happen in this state, just like gay marriage is happening in this state and in many other states. It's going to roll out. Legalized marijuana is already rolling out in several states in this country. It's going to take a long time, but it's going to be harder in New York. Whereas New York was one of the first with same-sex marriage, it's going to be one of the last with legalized marijuana, because the various lobbies and the alcohol, you know, the tavern, I mean, you name it. But eventually, it's going to happen. I don't see how that ball can stop rolling downhill.
Why couldn't the ball stop?
I don't think it will happen. The ball will not stop as long as more states continue to go the way others have already gone.
And as long as the state Senate is in Republican hands. I'm telling you that right now. Dean Skelos is not the leader, the Republican leader, is not about to sign on to legalize marijuana. And one of the things that's so terrible about this is the inequality of this. Look, if you're on Fifth Avenue on the 15th floor and you're smoking pot, you're not getting arrested. But if you're standing on Broadway and a policeman comes by and you happen to be of color or Hispanic or whatever, you're going to get caught. And so, therefore, it has been a terribly unequal situation. And that is one of the reasons to change it. The criminality, you know, the making of the mafia.
But, I mean, you could change the criminality without legalizing it. I mean, they've done this here and in many states.
You could, but you still leave a stain on somebody when you say you were arrested. Have you ever been arrested? Yes, I was arrested for marijuana possession. No, I mean, I think in the end, in balance, look, marijuana is not a good thing. Alcohol isn't a good thing. We, you know, taken to excess. We know that. And
nothing in excess is good, really, including food.
Dean Skelos will even approve a bill legalizing marijuana if some of the Long Island suburban people who are already using marijuana surreptitiously get to him and say, hey, this is nuts. We have to legalize marijuana.
That ain't going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen fast, but I think Ira is right. The ball is already moving forward, and eventually this will happen, and it will be a good thing. The demand for drugs in the United States is such a driver for the international drug trade. The drug cartels in Mexico fund a lot of their operations
then
by
selling
pot. Therefore,
would you say that we ought to legalize all drugs?
No, I'm not prepared to say that.
No, there are people saying that.
No, I know.
People like Charlie Rangel, I believe, have said that, and other people have said it.
Well, we can hardly do worse, I will admit that.
Because the same rationale exists.
Yeah.
The moment you say it's against the law, you give it to the criminal element, they make money on.
I mean, we could hardly do worse than the drug war, which has been a disaster. But no, I think it would be hard for the government to legalize cocaine or morphine, you know, on the streets. That's crazy, but pot is a whole different thing. It always has been in a different category.
There will be people who tell you no. There'll be people.
I know there's the whole thing, gateway drug, and
sure.
But it's different, and it's very similar to tobacco and alcohol.
Okay. By the way,
and it's a source of revenue. By the way, we need it.
Sorts of revenues that necessarily may not necessarily be appropriate. Ira, you seem to be of the opinion that this will happen here, and I assume by extension. In every state.
Yes, but I think unlike same-sex marriage, we will be one of the last states.
But still against federal law, and I still don't understand how in Colorado or Washington State, they can do this, and yet it's a federal crime still, and how do you get by that state's rights and federal law issue?
Don't ask, don't tell. They are just absolutely saying, the feds are saying, we're not going to prosecute here.
Another sign that it's inevitable, Ira.
This administration, but what about the next administration?
Well, I agree with you.
And all at that point, the infrastructure in Colorado will have been in place for X number of years.
At which point, you have a change in the heart of the people who see the way that it's working, if it's working well. And so, therefore, they start to lobby the federal government, and the federal government changes its mind.
If it's not only not being abused and there aren't people who are strung out wandering the streets of Boulder all day and all night, and it is providing a revenue stream for the government, it will happen. Mm-hmm. By the way, the Denver Post, which is affiliated with my newspaper, has made national news because they had advertised for and have now assigned a job of marijuana editor.
Now, is that like a restaurant critic? This is some good weed, man.
I think he will be looking at some of the issues that we've been discussing and what the impact is and how it's going and et cetera. And in fact, there was an interview with him who said he's hiring somebody to work with him. So it's going to be a beat in that newspaper.
Hiring.
Oh, that's funny.
I'm surprised you didn't jump in. Well, yeah, there's concern, too, about traffic accidents, too.
Sure.
People driving under the influence.
You have that with liquor.
Of course. And, you know, this topic, very popular. Anytime Alan and I have done a Vox Pop, even close to the marijuana issue, we get a lot of calls. So I invite you to send us your reckons. Send us your email at roundtable@wamc.org if you want to weigh in on this. roundtable@wamc.org.
Just mark it, hey, dude.
And think about the auxiliary benefits to the economy, to the munchie industry. Look at all the snack food. It's going to be increasing sales.
Oh, good for small business.
All right. Well, we have degenerated into silliness. So let's take a break, and we'll be back on the roundtable.
Support comes from the Francis Lehman Loeb Art Center at Vassar College, Poughkeepsie, featuring works by Picasso, O'Keeffe, Cole, and Miro. Open late Thursdays until 9 p.m. FLLAC.vassar.edu. Hummingbird Jewelers, Rhinebeck. Custom design specialists since 1978, featuring on-premises repair, restoration, and repurposing of family heirlooms. HummingbirdJewelers.com for holiday events. And Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries for the holidays and working to build a healthy and sustainable community through cooperative engagement. Berkshire.coop.
Sounds like a Young and the Restless. This is great bumper music. Thank you, Kimba. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. It's the panel this morning. 9:51 is the time. Rosemary Armeo is here. Ira Fussfeld, Alan Chartok. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The email address, roundtable@wamc.org. And Alan, we've got some.
Okay. Eric writes, vices. Prohibition of vices never works, and why is it the government's business if I want to take drugs, eat cheeseburgers, or visit a prostitute? Regulate
at the same time?
Maybe. Regulate and tax them. Vice attracts a criminal element when you make them crimes, says Eric.
Prostitution is not a victimless crime, so I object to that part of it.
All right.
So you would not regulate, you would not allow prostitution?
No, sir.
Well, see, I have a big problem with that.
Okay, here we
go. And I'll tell you why very briefly, because I think a lot of life is prostitution. I mean, what is it when, you know, a very good-looking, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to objectify here, woman marries a sugar daddy who's going to take care of her for the rest of her life and puts a lot of money on the table to do that. You think that's not prostitution?
It's not the same as prostitution, no, sir.
Guess what? Nothing's ever the same as prostitution. Nothing's ever the same as anything else. But I think there's a lot of prostitution in this world.
And I should remind you that the direct email for Alan is alan@wamc.org.
I don't think I would have a whole lot of trouble, nor Bessie do lawmakers, said, distinguishing
Bessie,
between those two types of prostitution.
Bessie Smith said
that
there's lots of, Bessie Smith saying there's lots of ways to sell it, baby, and there are.
Your contention that it's not a victimless crime, you're not specifically talking about the prostitutes who may or may not be forced into prostitution.
Exactly.
But,
I mean, in an economy like this where there are few options for women, where there's tons of trafficking going on in this country, we like to think that's something that happens elsewhere. It happens here. It's not in the same class as Eric, our letter writer, puts with having a drink or smoking pot.
Okay. All right, Alan?
Okay, now John writes, okay, listening to letters about the unemployed has me cheesed off.
Uh-oh.
I eventually stopped collecting unemployment because jumping through all of the DOJ's hoops to prove that I was job searching was taking more time than job searching. And since I'm a software developer, every job interview requires 1 to 2 days of review of all your technical knowledge. Imagine preparing for a final exam every time you need to interview. Instead of attacking the unemployed as shiftless, why not open an office where the unemployed can come for 8 hours a day to job search and network, you know, like actually do something to help them find a job. John.
Good idea.
Okay.
Now, that wouldn't even be very costly to do.
But, you know, the Unemployment Bureau, typically you will get a meet with the counselor at the Unemployment Bureau, and he or she will go over your case, see what your qualifications are for what kind of work, and then they will try to send you material as they see it, and also they will suggest job fairs and the like. But I don't know what this fellow's experience is, but I don't think it takes a lot of time for that mail to come to you or for those meetings.
Well, it's a question of intensity. It's a question of, do you really do it right? I think that's what he's saying. So you create this, you know, basically room where, you know, people, the hiring hall where people
right.
come
well,
in.
Well, I just think
and we'll get mail saying they do that in this case or that case.
I mean, I as already said, I believe the benefits should be extended because people need the benefits. But I do also think it should be incumbent upon the recipient of the benefits to go out and look for work.
Okay, so Tony writes, they don't own the house until it's paid for. When you still owe money to the lender who supplied you the funds with which you to purchase the price, it's not yours yet.
I agree with that.
I am living that.
Me too.
I think that's a good point. John writes, it's awful. I used to love listening to the entire 3 hours, but now I'm starting to tune in at 10 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock. Rain in the bickering of Alan and Ray. It's cringe-inducing.
It is cringe-inducing.
Change up the guests. We all know what sides of the debate Ray, Libby, Rosemary, Alan will be on practically every topic, even before the discussion begins. Quit not talking about what was talked about during the breaks. I'm sure it was funny. Never let Joe go on vacation. My two cents, John.
Well.
Thank you for listening, John.
Yeah. Another satisfied
listening.
Customer. That's, yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
And then.
Affirming.
And Richard writes, love you guys.
Well, you know.
See, can't love
can't
you
please
guys.
Everyone. You got to
please
yourself.
Let me read
yourself.
That one more time. Love you guys. Okay. And then.
Do we bicker?
Yes. Okay. I agree with him on that point.
You know what, Rosemary? I'll start bickering with you then. How about that?
Okay. Then how about Richard writes, putting their money in the stock market need to remember that it is inherently risky. This is why we should encourage our senators and congressmen to enact legislation in the spirit of the Glass-Steagall Act to prevent banks from legally gambling with bank deposits. When Glass-Steagall was repealed in 1998, Senator Byron Dorgan, who was the president when that happened? Bill Clinton, by the way. That's me, not him. Senator Byron Dorgan predicted an economic meltdown in 10 years, which is just what happened, and without similar protections will happen again. Rich in Delmar. Okay. And let's see. Is there anything else? Oh, yeah, here. I don't know how to read that. Okay. Sardandad writes, if the function in group stamp in food stamp program is a part of function of the poor economy, shouldn't there be savings from improved economy? I'm just reading. So Marietta writes to Ray.
Hi, Marietta.
Okay.
Is this something you can read on the air?
I don't know. It says, "Oh well."
Or, I told you never to call me at the office.
Oh well, miss you that time, but you are in top. You are all in top form. This AM, too. Thanks for a very enjoyable 15 minutes on the drive to work, Marietta.
You know, she's a fine doctor. In fact, I think Marietta has been on Vox Pop with you.
Oh, yes. I know her work.
Indeed.
So
she drives all the way to Georgia.
So that's just some of the mail.
That's funny. I got it, Ira. So we're out of time for another topic.
No.
Well, it's 9:57. We have 1 minute.
Okay.
So let's throw it over to Ira.
Well, I was going to ask Ray, the Mets fan, what he thinks about them purchasing the contract of one of the heaviest and oldest pitchers in the history of baseball.
Well, you know, I have a problem with the signing of Bartolo Colon because he served a 50-game. When did he serve the 50-game
year
suspension?
Before last.
Okay.
Yeah, and last year he had an excellent season.
Yeah, and well, now he's 40.
41 in the spring.
That's old.
But he was using PEDs, and suddenly now at 40 he's throwing 97 miles an hour again.
Warner Wolf said this morning on a rival station that when the Mets play the Yankees and Bartolo Colon starts for the Mets and C.C. Sabathia starts for the Yankees, it will be the game where the heaviest pitchers in the history of baseball faced each other.
Right. I cheer for the heavy fat guys.
See that? Now, that's what Rosemary said, not I, Alan.
Well, all I know
is my mouth.
The post-game spread at that game
will be phenomenal.
Well,
that's got to be part of the contract. For people who don't know, in baseball, at the end of the game, when the players go back to the clubhouse, there is typically a buffet of some sort to feed the players because they don't eat before the game. In fact, famously, some managers, when they would get angry after a game, would come in and throw the spread on the floor so the players wouldn't eat it. But to Ray's point, that'll be a very nice buffet with the Mets now.
Well, that's a great way to end the show today.
No, that's why I got into sports writing, you know.
For the food?
Yeah, but we weren't allowed to eat their food. But there, when I was doing it, there was free food in the press box, no longer. We now have to pay.
Well, the times they are a-shaunting.
It's terrible.
All right, that's it for today. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Sorry if we offended you, and apparently we did. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address. Two more hours without a panel straight ahead.